All right, so everybody, welcome to our session. This is a MarkLogic sponsored session, and we are here to talk about smart content, connecting the data behind the hits at Sony Pictures. And I am super glad to be here. So I am Matt Turner. I'm the CTO for media and manufacturing at MarkLogic. That means that at MarkLogic, we're a database company. All of our customers who make really, really cool stuff that all of us enjoy, those are my customers. And I'm super happy to be here today because we are going to be talking about Sony Pictures. And we're specifically going to be talking about how Rob's project at Sony Pictures is about integrating the data behind the scenes. All the data you need to get together to get the content out to your distribution partners and out to the fans and the customers that love it. And that's a really big picture part of, that's a really important part of the process, obviously. It's where it's money. And it's also part of a bigger story that we've been starting. So I'm going to start off with just a quick introduction and hand it over to Rob. Rob's going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Sony Pictures and Mirage. Mirage is then going to talk a little bit about how all this fits. I'm going to take it back on, and if we stay on target, we will have time for questions. So we're going to motor through this. I know you guys are probably going to have a lot of questions, so we're going to get on to this. All right, so to introduce this, I'm going to take you all through the Wayback Machine here. I'm going to take you back about 4 years ago to actually the beginning of something called smart content. So we got together with Guy and Mary at the Mace Alliance to think about this idea of all the content, all the data around the content as a bigger topic. And this was, again, 4 years ago, so it's kind of a reminder that this is actually a long time ago. In fact, it was so long ago that Guy Finley had hair. I have visual proof that I am just completely making that up. But it was a while ago, so I wanted to go back to that original concept and just show you the kind of the slide from it. This is actually what we put up at the first session in 2014. We said, look, you have the content in the middle, but what we're talking about is all around every part of the process. Inception, pre-production, post-production, distribution, out into the archive, there's the data. And all that data all around the process is actually what's really important. When you integrate all the data, you get this idea of smart content. Another thing is maybe that's actually really what is most important as an entertainment organization. So this picture, and Guy was the one and he had another slide, which was from inception to infinity, and I never let that one. That didn't really take off, if you know, but I bring it back up. So we've been lucky at MarkLogic to be involved in that, next 4 years with a couple projects that really kind of exemplify this. So some of our customers have taken our software, so MarkLogic, we're database software. We take a different approach to bringing the data together. It's about NoSQL, so flexible structures and semantics, the connections between them, and not about rigid rows and columns. We've been fortunate at MarkLogic to have a couple projects, we've involved a couple projects that take all the data and actually making good on the smart content vision by taking all that data and putting it into a data hub that drives, for instance, the BBC's delivery side. So these, the BBC projects that we've done are all about taking all the data from across the organization, from no matter what its source is, in fact, even from their partner sources, and taking that program metadata, putting it into a hub, and making it available for all the delivery pathways to the BBC. It started off with the BBC Olympics and sports, still going on today with all their sports news, and actually much of their entertainment content comes out of this data hub that I think really stands out as smart content. Then we got involved with the SNL app, so Saturday Night Live's 40th anniversary, the app that still powers it today. And here, they took the show data and mixed it with all the ways the fans think about the show. That big picture of all those eras and great characters, and put that into the show, and then not only the data about that, but actually how the customers, how the fans, but they are customers, interact with it. And that bigger picture of smart content drove an app that's immersive, addictive, still to this day is one of the best ways to enjoy that content. And then we've done some experiments here, looking at that big picture of all the different cycles going into production. So we did a project with Disney and ETC called The Suitcase that looked at capturing with the data hub data from all the different production systems and then actually using that data going forward into the process. And as anybody in the industry knows, that's not a done thing, where everybody's still working on that. But those kinds of projects really stand out. And what all these projects had in common was they didn't take a traditional approach to solving the data. So I mentioned we're not a rows and columns database company. Our projects have a lot more flexibility, but much of the data out there is. So when you take that smart content vision and you lay it out, and you realize there's all this great data about the content, how it fits together, the metadata, even the customers, all this great data is available, and every single part of the organization needs access to all this data. On that line, everybody needs access to the data, but because almost all the systems you guys interact with are rigid rows and columns, it's in systems that are only good for one part. The planning data about the planning data and taxonomies are totally different than the production and can't be used by the people in archive. So today, this is what you have. You have all this different data that's needed, and all those lines, those are all the people that you guys work with who are running around emailing, creating Excel spreadsheets, trying to get to the data they need. And you know, when we talk about smart content, it's not smart. So all these projects have in common, tip it off to Rob, that they use SmartLogic's unique capabilities to bring data together more flexibly in a data hub, a separate system that has the information and then makes it available on down the process. So that's my quick intro. See how I'm doing on time. And I'm going to hand it over to Rob. Good. It's actually 6 minutes in. So we're going to be watching the clock. But no, not really. So I'm going to hand it over to Rob to talk a little bit about taking this approach at Sony Pictures.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Matt. So connecting the data behind the hits, right? That's what it was? Okay, so kudos. It's catchy and it's factual, right? Because you usually don't have both of those, right? You can be catchy but not factual.
And it references a show.
A bunch of you know, snow job. Or factual but not really that catchy. So anyway, that's cool. So this will be of interest to you if you like data. I mean, it'll energize, you know, it energizes us. We're really excited about the project. If you like organization and cleanliness and systems and things like that, which if you're in this industry is probably something that appeals to you, then you know hopefully this is of some interest. It's not show business type stuff. It's the nuts and bolts business of licensing and distribution. So it's heavy transactional stuff. But nevertheless, the fact that we were able to consolidate and clean up our environment and SmartLogic was a part of that is really pretty exciting to us. So this project involved the merging of two groups. There was Sony Pictures Television, which is where Neeraj and I are from, consists of a distribution arms, an ad sales, US production, international production, and worldwide networks. So this particular project involved the consolidation, merger of US and international distribution. And that represents multi-billions in business that take the Sony-produced content, The Good Doctor, The Blacklist, SWAT, Shark Tank, those types of shows, and license them out to the world. So some of that content, as you guys probably know, if you're from studios, originates at your own studio, or it is licensed or co-owned by other groups. And so the ownership relationship can be quite complex, and then the idea is to get content out to as many places as you can and license it in as many ways as you possibly can. So just to give you a little background, this is going to be remedial for some folks who understand distribution, but some people come into the business and they think that licensing of intellectual property can be handled by an ERP system. And you know, ERP systems are great. They have their own complexities. They perform very difficult things. But if you think about manufacturing and sale of intellectual property relative to manufacturing and sale of, say, chairs or tables or something like that, it's a totally different dynamic. If you're a physical goods manufacturer, you manufacture 100,000 of something and you sell to zero. If you're an intellectual property sales, or you're leasing the product, and then second of all, you have extremely complex combinations of deals that can happen that increases the amount of data you have to analyze to know what your inventory looks like. And so it's a very complex business, intellectual property sale, I'm sure a lot of you folks know. So there are all these different aspects of managing, capturing details into a contract. There are deal points, exploitation rights, options, material requests, because those orders have to be fulfilled. There's availability, or avails, which I'm sure a lot of you guys know about. The notion of managing your inventory, taking a chunk out of it, and then understanding what you have left out of that universe of possible sales of that intellectual property, that represents your avails, the rights in and rights out. And then document storage of the contracts and so on. All that trickles into fees, which become actionable financial records, billing, collections, invoicing, all that stuff has to happen based upon what these contracts say. So it's, as I said, I hope I, you know, there's some appreciation for the fact that it's a complex business. And so the software that models it, captures it, manages it, is also very complex. So our challenge was kind of on two different vectors. First of all, coming into this, we had an aging landscape. So we had about a 30-year-old mainframe that was handling our U.S. distribution. That guy's right in the middle. And it was a pain point, frankly. Every dollar that flowed through distribution on the domestic side had to go through the mainframe. And it pretty much run out of gas. You know, it just was hard to maintain. It was literally very difficult to accomplish any new development in that environment. And the U.S. systems had a number of other systems that were involved in a lot of manual processes, as you might understand, because of that mainframe, you know, being stuck in the middle there, having to maneuver around it and do things in a manual way just to get transactions through. So the challenge for us was to merge the domestic group and the international group. The international group also had some straggler applications, some Java applet applications. Niraj can talk a little bit about what the resulting environment looked like. But we also had, you know, not a 30-year-old mainframe, but some 15-year-old apps and some manual processes, and a need to condense and collapse these two groups. So there's a lot of change management involved. And that alone is tough when you have users of different groups and you're almost in an M&A type of activity. So that was a challenge. So the two vectors were merging of the two groups and then getting rid of a lot of the old antiquated technology. So the way we wound up doing it was there was kind of a clear winner in terms of the more recent and more modern systems. And that wound up being our international sales system. And then our international, and at that point it had become an international and U.S. finance system. So there were some surviving applications, but there was stuff in the middle that had to go that was no longer suitable for purpose. So we, in this middle tier right here, in this middle region, we translate all of the sales and contract terms into billing templates and payment terms. And so that's kind of a moderator stage where the sales and finance people can talk to each other about how the status of contracts and do a lot of validation on contracts and things like that. So that middle region really had to change. What we wound up with is a more simplified workflow, and Niraj has been working day and night to get this live, and they're in the process of doing a cutover right now. So this is about a year and a half long project. And what we did is we simplified things. We made improvements all along the way in terms of workflow, efficiencies, better data availability and whatnot. But the key largest application that we built here was what we call our Sales to Finance Hub. And we built that on MarkLogic. Just so a little bit of background on the origin of that middle tier. We decided to use MarkLogic as what we call a conversion hub. So we had mainframe data, we had a lot of manual data, we had an old Java application in the domestic side, and it was very tough to piece everything together into a single story or into concrete atomic deals that we could transfer over to that international system. So we said, let's use the flexibility of a NoSQL and yet an ACID-compliant database in MarkLogic to throw all this stuff together and make sense of it. And we kind of reserved the right throughout this process just to use it as a conversion hub, something where we could make sense of the data, what survived, what did we throw away, what should the data look like in the eventual target system. We wound up, in the end, just leaving some of that data landed, a considerable amount of that data landed into MarkLogic and it became our transactional system. So Niraj is going to explain a little bit about some of the technologies that were involved. It's very microservices based. We retired a lot of manual processes. We streamlined workflows. We've united two different business units who are behaving in completely different ways. And we're really pleased. The business is really pleased. We're literally going to save thousands of hours and effort on the workflow side for the business. And so Niraj will get a little bit more in depth on what that middle section looks like.
So now we have the diagram.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Niraj. I'm the solutions architect for television sales and distribution. And What you're seeing here is, you know, that middle piece that Rob was talking about, the sales to finance handoff piece, is one of the screens that we've built. Rob has made us extremely proud. He keeps calling it the most beautiful screen ever. So
the best screen in Hollywood.
The best screen in Hollywood, exactly. So the best screen in Hollywood. So I'm pleased to see the best screen in Hollywood. A little bit into the architecture piece. So if you think about, you know, when you're taking away or retiring legacy applications, you want to take those business functions and you're rebuilding them into your surviving application. Needless to say, the most easiest thing to do is you probably would put all of that into your monolith application because that's the path of least resistance. Similarly, you would take all the corresponding data and you would put it into your RDBMS because that would be the path of least resistance in terms of making no architectural changes. But however, that's not a good representation about how your data is, what sort of operations you do on the data, and neither is it scalable. So if you think about, you have 10 business functions which you are actually developing. Does each one scale equal to the other? Probably not, is because some of these are more heavily used. Exactly what microservices does for us. It actually breaks it down, keeps those business functions separately, each one presented to the application as a service. And now you're not only scalable, your scalability granularity has come down to that business function, but you are also more closer to deploying these into the cloud. It makes you much more adaptive, and these are cloud native. So actually, if you see, we have Spring Boot, which is powering up all of these microservices that sits in between, which by itself, by the nature of it, actually makes it, you know, being a part of the Spring Cloud framework, makes it much more feasible to take this and put it into the cloud. And if I know that few of my services, like sales to finance, one of the microservices, is going to be more heavily used, I'm going to horizontally scale out and I'm going to have much more instances of that. Whereas with the traditional approach, you basically have to add more and more JBoss nodes to it. So that's more to do with, you know, the mid-tier aspect of it. Of course, some of these microservices you are seeing are more orchestration level. So like security, API gateway, service discovery, these are more orchestration level microservices. Some of these frameworks are originally even developed by Netflix for their companies. Like the API gateway and the service discovery have been developed by Netflix Eureka, Netflix Zool. Just a few technical terms over there, just so how smart I am. So. but predominantly they open sourced it for the rest of the industry to use, and it became a part of the Spring framework as well. Similarly, going down to the middle tier, one of the key things that we did as we were analyzing this data is what sort of operations are going to be done on this data, right? MarkLogic had a white paper a while back, which I personally read. It talked about how they are changing the EDL process to more of an ELT process. So what's extract, transform, and load, when you're trying to get rid of those data silos, becomes more extract, load, and then transform. Essentially, the sort of operations we were doing on it, because not only is this MarkLogic database for us getting a feed from the sales system, there are plenty other enterprise systems that we have that is also getting its feeds from. And so all of that feeds basically comes right into MarkLogic, and then those UIs that you were seeing are the apps which are empowering the users to initiate those sort of transformations through workflows or through different processes that they do. All of that transformation happens on the MarkLogic side using server-side JavaScript, very close to the data that it's actually manipulating, so it's pretty fast. Also, because of the sort of operations we were doing on it, we are definitely very heavy on searching through large documents, searching across hundreds and thousands of documents. And MarkLogic, by default, does a lot of indexing across all the attributes that actually do get ingested. So that definitely helps out a lot, because traditionally what we've seen is once you have data sitting in an RDBMS, you're basically adding like a Solr or some sort of a Leucine-powered indexing mechanism on top of it to be able to search faster, something that you don't have to do when your data resides on the MarkLogic side. Similarly, some of the other things that you'll also notice is we also brought up like ActiveMQ, which guarantees the delivery and the order of the messages. And as long as all of these systems that are talking to each other, including MarkLogic, are able to handle APIs, which are able to understand REST-based contracts, you basically have a very loosely coupled system which is able to scale across all layers. It can scale across a middle tier, it can scale across the persistence layer. So that pretty much actually gives us the flexibility of giving very quick turnarounds in terms of those business functions to the business users. Because as they ask for something, you typically don't have to modify your monolith, you don't have to test all of that. You're very limited to either something's changing on the MarkLogic side, some modules or some REST APIs changing on the MarkLogic side or the microservices, and quickly deploy that with minimal testing having to do. And on top of the whole ecosystem, we slapped in Angular to give them single page application look and feel, which is what you were seeing in the PowerPoint presentation right before this. So that actually, is giving us now the capability of very fast search, very search pass through, hundreds and thousands of records showing up in the UI, given the browser's capabilities, and happy business users.
All right. Okay, guys, I'm not gonna let you off that easy though, because I'm gonna go back, Rob, to the best screen in Hollywood and ask you to explain what that means.
I'll just mention the data store underneath this is MarkLogic data, right? And this is one of those validation and kind of intermediary moderation screens that takes contract data and turns it into financial record and payment terms. And as an example of the prior application, the Java application that we had, it would do just a subset of this functionality. But it had gotten to the point where the business had expanded and grown, and the number of dimensions that had to be considered, and the amount of data, global in the age of global deals, where Netflix is buying 130 territories, things like that, was putting a strain on the relational database system to the point where even presenting a subset of this data was taking 30 minutes to 40 minutes just to show the data. I mean, it was literally incredible. We were just wondering how somebody could know that an app was still working after sitting for 30 minutes. I mean, at some point you'd have to call up the DBA and say, what's going on? And you'd have to say, oh, just hold on a little while longer, And then, just the experience of users over time, they just become, just become adjusted to that kind of performance. So it's just shocking the additional value that we can provide. But this is a sample deal. We threw a commercial grid on top of it. It's the AG grid on top of that data. And it's primarily REST data points that are being accessed on the back end to show this data. The users love to see tons of data. They really, if they could, they often work in Excel, but there's no round trip back to the server that way. This gives them an experience that allows them to see a ton of data. And they can read, 25,000 to 80,000 records, right? And you've done compression. I mean, it was
upwards of 100,000 records.
Yeah.
Across 50 problems, 60 problems.
Right. So if they really want to test this thing out, they might wait 20 seconds or something for that much data to show up. But Niraj has got compression active between the browser and the server, and then this pivot table can keep that stuff local in the browser. And it's truly, this is one of the screens that's going to save thousands of hours, and just the visibility and awareness of what's going on in the field.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
All right, so I'm going to, Niraj, why don't you stay up for a second. Does anybody have any questions about the project, Niraj? Any questions for these guys? We have I have something to finish with, but we have a couple minutes now for not a lot of questions. I already asked about what the screen was. Just chat it out.
Where's all the data stored?
Do you want me to answer that?
So the data is actually stored for the screen that you're looking at. Everything is in MarkLogic. We do have other pieces with respect to what we had in the monolith that resides in the relational database as well. But everything you're seeing on the screen is completely powered by MarkLogic.
Through remote servers, or so international and domestic US?
It's all consolidated.
In our data center.
Yeah,
so
in
it's in our data center. Running on-premise.
Any more questions? No, we're all good. We've experienced the best screen in Hollywood. All right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, guys. And I think, I wanted to Rob to get back to the screen for a second to underscore what data can do for people's everyday jobs. Can you ask a question for everybody? Can you ask it for everybody? I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude.
It's AG grid. We've used some open source grids like Sentia Grid and whatnot.
Yeah.
But we went with a commercial grid.
I think that's what I wanted to know.
No, that's all good. We all want to know. I mean, this is magic that these guys in 20 seconds can produce a grid, a dynamic grid, where people who are modeling products, modeling distribution products, can dynamically pick and choose attributes on what used to be, they used to have to set that in place and wait 30 minutes for the database to return a possible list and then do it again and again. So you can ask questions about it all day long. All right, so thanks, Rob. Thanks, Niraj. Really great example, and also about how a data hub fits into your architecture. It's not the only thing. Store the data, make it available. That's our job. Have the smarts and the ability and the business knowledge to put it in front of the users. That's your job. That's Sony Pictures' job, and that's what's really great. So I'm going to finish this up just coming back to where I started. The idea here is around smart content is to make use of all the different data. Make a hub, a data hub. So Rob talked about the conversion hub, eventually becoming the transaction hub. And that picture can extend off to almost any part of the process. So we've done it for metadata, but now we're thinking about it for financial data. It's actually a pattern that's pretty common across all of our business, from financial services to healthcare. We're getting to manufacturing. These data hubs are making a big, big difference. And in that picture of bringing all that together, it's about taking what we do, our project, making data, being able to store data very flexibly, making it available, and something Rob didn't get into, but making it very secure. So transactions, you mentioned transactions and security, those are things we care about. These data hubs are really part of people's day-to-day lives and making business decisions. And we've taken all that into something that we call the operational data hub pattern. So this is a repeatable pattern for taking data in, talking about the ELT process, so taking data in, then transforming it in a harmonization process, bringing that data, making all the connections, and then letting other systems access it. And this for us is pretty foundational. Last week we had our user conference and we announced that we've got a data hub framework as part of our product. So if you ever heard from MarkLogic in the past, we talked about really great projects, how we do great indexing, great search, and great access, and great security. Well, this is how we put it in place with the data hub pattern. And that's where I want to leave you with, is this pattern of bringing data together. It's making a huge impact across many, many parts of the business, and is, I think, the way that you can really get smart about your data and make true on the promise of smart content. So thank you all for coming, and thanks for great work.